So what do you think is going to happen with that? I think that there is a bigger play here. And what's going on is that anywhere there is an oil pipeline that threat... See, let me you brought up a good point here. Let me go ahead and make this point. The bottom line is that the West is broke. The West is broke. The financial system is going to collapse. The West needs to go into Syria, Iraq, Iran, Russia, and seize assets. Otherwise, the money people, the uber rich, is are going to lose everything. They're going to be wiped out. They've got $4 quadrillion worth of derivatives exposure that they can't cover. And what they're trying to do is just kick the can down the road. They look at war as a masking event that allows them to, you know, get all this stuff off their books as quickly as they can so that they don't get wiped out. They don't care if people die. All they care about is the money. And that's really the end game about what's going on here. That's the backstory.
Yeah, the story is two points in my opinion. Economy and money and weapons. Weapons. They want to sell weapons. I think Russia wants to sell weapons somewhere in the Gulf area, for example.
Well, they're certainly making some impressive weapon systems out there. Their new fighter jet is certainly impressive. It's much better than the F-35, which is as Gordon Duff calls it, the flying garbage truck. So. But I hate to see us get into that type of things. Weapons produce nothing. They destroy everything. And you know, the reason – see, the smart guys who run our economy in the West made some bad bets. They thought that this moving manufacturing from the USA to China was going to help them. Little did they realize that they gutted their primary market, you know, the U.S. being the major consumer of all products in the world, and by putting us into this situation where we're working as cheap as the Chinese are now, they don't have an economy. They've killed their cash cow, and so now these guys need a war, and need a reason to destroy things so they can go back and rebuild things. It's the constant endless cycle. Anyway, Nana, I've got another guest holding here. Anything else? Anything else important?
Yeah, it's very important now to. Before I go, it's important not to talk about Iran. I mean, Iran would be a huge market for Europe, for the United States, for investment. This is very important, and I think Iran also is going to play a very important role, a very pivotal role in finding out solutions for the Syrian crisis.
Well,
keep your eye on Iran.
Well, I think you're right, and I've been advocating to normalize relationships with Iran now for 2.5 years because that is such a good consumer market for the USA. It would help our economy. It would help their economy. But there's other interests out there who don't want to see that happen, and the reason why is that if Iranian oil comes on the open market without sanctions, then the price of gasoline in the U.S. here is going to go from about $3 a gallon down to, $1.50. It's going to be cut in half. And so there are vested interests that want to prevent this at all cost. And those are the things that worry me. Those are the people who we have to stand up to in our own country here.
I see. Okay. That's right. I agree with you. Anyway, thank you very much. I will leave you to your...
Nana, one more thing before you go. Who have you arranged to have as my guest next week?
Your guest will be our Minister of Justice, Dr. Najm Al Ahmad. I already spoke to him. He said he will be delighted and he will be happy to talk to your radio station. And he asked me to schedule the time for him in order to get prepared for the interview. And he would like very much to talk about terrorism, about Putin initiative for combating terrorism, because he thinks this is of a great value. This is the core issue. And the rest is details, in his opinion.
Okay, well, we've got our other guest, Ian, wants to ask you a question, Nana. Can you take a question from Ian real quick? Ian, go ahead.
Hi, yes, Nana, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
I just wanted to quickly ask you, from a Syrian perspective, what your opinion of Putin was, and I'll explain why I want to know. That I have had great difficulty in trying to assess the man and what he is and what he represents and who he's really working for. And the two reasons for that are for a Western perspective, he's only given just enough aid to the people, the Ukrainian rebels and Syria, to keep the heads above water, but he could have done a lot more. And that's why I'm a bit suspicious. So if you could maybe give me a Syrian perspective on the man, that would be wonderful.
You are British, sir?
Yes.
I can recognize that from your accent. Okay. Okay. Well, listen, I will give you my personal opinion. I don't want to give you the Syrian official personal opinion because you know, we have Syria has an alliance with Russia.
Yes.
So it wouldn't be fair to give you the Syrian opinion, the official opinion, of course. If my personal opinion, I do respect the guy. I think he's a very seasoned politician, very experienced man. You know, he used to be a KGB in the past, and you know, he's security man.
Colonel in the KGB.
Yeah, intelligence. He used to be in the intelligence. And the most important thing for Putin and for any leader in the world, he is serving his country, sir. I think so. He is serving the interests of his country in the first place. Then, what he's doing, if does it match with the interest of his country, okay. If doesn't match, it is a different issue altogether. But I, in my opinion, doing great regarding this initiative which he launched about combating terrorism. This is the best initiative, in my opinion, because not one country, even the United States of America, is able to fight ISIS, al-Nusra, and the terrorists, the affiliated group. Those groups have sleeper cells everywhere in the world. I will give you an example. It's I will make it easy. When you have a Pandora box and you unleash all the evil from this Pandora box, it's very difficult to keep a lid on it. And this is what happened. Exactly, this is what happened. Now it is out of control. Cannot be controlled. Yes. Nobody can control this phenomena. That's why Putin, I know Putin, maybe he doesn't like Saudi Arabia, he doesn't like Turkey, he doesn't like Qatar, but it is not the idea of liking or disliking. We have to concert efforts in order to fight, of course, in order to fight this phenomena, this enemy. This is a very dangerous enemy, sir. It cannot be eliminated by one state or one country. It's difficult. I do respect Putin. I think he's a very smart person. He did launch this initiative at the right time, in my opinion. Anything else?
I certainly agree that he's a very smart operator.
Of course, he's a very smart operator. I mean, because America was not doing really well in fighting ISIS.
Let me chime in here, because America wasn't doing well in fighting ISIS. This is because there's elements within the American government and within the American civilian sector that want ISIS to succeed. There's very definitely elements out there. I mean, ISIS was a creation. It was created. Like I said, you know, we had so many U.S. Depots of weapons and other things that ISIS happened to just come across. We had hundreds of millions of dollars in a bank that ISIS happened to take. We've inadvertently dropped supplies. Oh, we meant to give them to the Iraqi army, but we dropped them in ISIS's camp instead. Oh,
I know.
Look at us.
I know.
Aren't we inept and stupid? That's not what's going on. I mean, this is a huge lie. And you know, elements within the American government and within the American civilian sector are up to their eyeballs in ISIS because they profit from it.
Of course, they are profiting from it. We know they are profiting from ISIS, from oil and gas, the transportation of oil and gas and money and cash money and everything. We know that. And then there is no interest for the U.S. government to end ISIS, to eliminate ISIS. Why should they? Why should they do that? They are making a lot of money. They are benefiting from the existence, the sheer existence of ISIS.
Personally, right. I think if Obama wasn't in his, you know, final stage of office, then we wouldn't have seen America do anything. But, you know, because Obama isn't up for election again, he can do more what he wants than he could earlier in his presidency. And I think if he weren't in that phase of his presidency, we probably wouldn't have seen America do as much as it has against ISIS. And I don't think we would have seen the Iranian nuclear deal come to pass earlier in the presidency either. I feel now he can do a few things because, you know, he has much less to lose. And I think that's why the timing of this Iranian deal has happened now.
Well,
President Obama wants to go down in history as a hero. I mean, I think he's a very smart person. He did the right thing, too. He's a man of peace.
Agree.
And he's been... Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think he wants to leave a legacy.
Well, the bottom yes. end, the bottom line is what Obama is facing is he's coming face to face with this Israeli fifth column that is dominating all of our institutions. I mean, you look at this Victoria Nuland, like I mentioned, the woman who's calling policy for the Ukraine issue. That's not an Obama policy. That's a Nuland issue. That's a Kagan issue. That's on the roadmap of these people. This neocon issue, which is at the polar opposite of what Obama represents, and I think we need to get all these neocons, round them up, and hang them.
I wouldn't disagree.
So, anyway, Nana, we're coming up on our first break here. I really had Ian scheduled for the show.
Yeah.
But I'll give you one more minute if you got any other final closing comments or anything.
So you want to go now?
No, I'm giving you another minute or two if you need closing comments.
Go ahead.
Okay. Have you got anything else to tell us, Nana, before you go?
Yeah, I'm trying to get that out of her.
Hello?
Yeah, Nana, do you have anything else to tell us before you go?
Yes, tell me before I go. Anything else?
No, we're asking you if you have anything else.
No. I do have a lot of admiration for President Obama. I agree with you about the fifth column, but he's doing well. In my opinion, he's doing very well so far.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, well, Nana, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, Nana.
Okay, Ian. Welcome to the show. Our guest today is Ian Greenhall. So,
good evening, everybody.
And you know, so welcome, Ian. You know, we had a completely different show worked up today. We were going to talk about the Bolsheviks and their financial ties to this Rothschild banking empire. And you know, I'd like to get us back on track. But before we do that, what's your take on this with the Syrian military delegation going to Moscow to help formulate a set of global policies to combat terrorism everywhere?
I think on the face of it, it's extremely good news. There are only two questions in my mind, and the questions that have been there for a year or two. The first one is what I asked Nana, you know, what is her opinion of Putin? Because while, you know, he does very much seem to be a Russian patriot and, you know, put Russian people first, I'm not convinced that is the only agenda that he's following. Now, it's one of two things. Either he is what Nana said, very smart operator, a Russian patriot, and he's playing a game where he knows he can only push things so far against the international elite before they'll turn him into Hitler and destroy him, or he was working with the international elite and the conflict between East and West that we're seeing over Syria and the Ukraine is nothing more than a second act of the phony Cold War. So, you know, I haven't got answers to that question, And I think it will take more time studying events to figure it out. And it might take quite a while to figure it out. But in the end, you know, it'll become clear.
Well, I think you're correct. And I think that all of us have to keep our eyes and ears open and be able to make discerning decisions. But I think that the West, see, this terrorism thing has been a flop for them. You know, terrorists don't require, you know, multi-billion dollar weapon systems that they're never going to use, like ICBMs. You know, they don't have to build inequality into an ICBM because it's never going to be used.
Yes.
You know, that's the assumption here. And that's what that whole mutually assured destruction doctrine was about. So, boy, we've got a wonderful excuse here to really fatten up our military-industrial complex and build stuff that, you know, we can build it for you know, cost next to nothing, but we can charge up the gazoo for it because we're never going to have to find out if these work or not. Whereas if you want to build weapon systems to go fight terrorism, you're talking a whole different class of weapon system. It's not the multi-billion dollar per unit that they're selling. It can be as low as a few $100, you know, $100,000. I mean, there's the U.S. Military has been taking a lot of criticism for using a $5 million bomb to take out one tent. I mean, that's a pretty famous YouTube video where they're dropping a $5 million bomb, laser guided, everything's precise, you know, to take out a tent that cost $150. And so you look at the war of attrition and the cost benefit ratio, and the U.S. is behind the curve on that. And I hear our music. We'll be right back. I want to pick this up on the other side, so stick with us, okay, folks? We'll be right back.
Is 100% listener supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds, 25 years in the freezer, long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if the prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need to ask humans to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What do we do in life? It goes in eternity.
Join Join the Sacred Matrix with hosts Janet Karalesson and Dr. Sasha Lesson, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio.
Here we free ourselves from the God spell, transform the perverted matrix to the divine one. We become conscious and we embrace universal unlimited love.
We feature colorful guests and topics such as extraterrestrials, ghosts, interdimensionals, and aliens. We examine evidence, anomalies, archaeological ruins, and anthropology.
We explore past lives, future lives, life between lives. We get into astral projection, near-death experiences, archetypes, visions, and dreams.
Episodes include time travel, teleportation, counseling, spirituality, tantra, relationships, peace, shamanism, peak experiences, and ego transcendence.
Join the lessons Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com for The Sacred Matrix, a divine paradigm of love.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on VeteransToday.com as well as FreedomSlips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Thursday, August 6th, 2015. My guest for this segment of the show is Ian Greenhalgh. Ian, welcome back, sir.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Mike.
So anyway, where do we leave this all? Because I want to pick this back up, that the military-industrial complex tried to create this phony war on terror. That's why they nuked the World Trade Center on 9/11, in order to create this drama to compel the American people to go fight a war against a non-existent enemy that was created by our own intelligence agencies to give the military-industrial complex something to do.
Manufacture of a clear and present danger.
Yeah, but it's been it hasn't been successful as they'd like. You know, like I said, they miscalculated. There's a lot more money in building big submarines and aircraft carriers and ICBMs. There's more money in that for the arms merchants than there is selling a bunch of AR-15s or MRAPs or other things. They're just stymied. They thought, well, this will replace the end of the Cold War. Well, you know what, it hasn't replaced the end of the Cold War, and so what they've got to do is try to reconstitute the Cold War. But let me tell you what I've learned. I've been to Russia. I've been to Ukraine. I've been throughout what was the former Soviet bloc, and you know what? Those people are just like us. They're kind. They're fun. They're loving. They don't want war any more than we want.
And
to put this thing on a war footing, this is nonsense. And like I said earlier in the show, that the West is broke. The money guys they're so smart, they've risked everything they've got, and now they've got to create either a war or some sort of a cold war that they can continue to spend money and milk the taxpayers on. But guess what? the taxpayers are broke too, because when they moved everything to China, the American workers are all out of work. We got, over 100 million people who are either unemployed or underemployed. And this is the cold, hard realities. These guys screwed the pooch, and they don't know how to admit it.
They went to the well one too many times, and the well was dry because they'd already taken most of the water in the past.
Well, they had, and if like I said, I really welcome the global financial collapse, because I would like to see us end this whole system, this Western debt-based usury system, because as I said many times on this radio show, it's designed to concentrate more and more wealth into fewer and fewer hands.
Yes.
Well, that is a formula for failure. It didn't work in the past. It's not going to work now. The wealth has to be distributed for there to be a robust and vibrant economy. But these guys are too stingy to want to give up anything to anybody. And they're afraid. They're afraid that what they've done will be found out, and that the American people or the people of the planet will hunt them down and kill them. So they have no choice. In their minds, they have no choice but to keep doing more of what they have been doing.
I agree. I mean, imagine if you put somebody credible who was in the know about 9/11 on primetime TV and, in the New York market, and had them tell those millions of New Yorkers that the reason why 100,000 of them are dead or dying from rare cancers is because Israel nuked them. How long do you think it would be before the Israeli consulate was on fire and people were rioting in the streets in New York City? I don't think it would be all that long, because these people have suffered the effects of 9/11. They are desperate in many cases for some kind of answer, but because they don't know what really happened. They know that what they've been told isn't true, but they don't have any answers. I think you're right that the elite are running scared, and that is visible in their increasingly more desperate maneuvers in this fake war on terror.
Oh, I agree, and so they're desperate, they're cornered, and how do we advise the American people, the American populace, or the global populace to deal with this?
Well, the first thing has always got to be, I think, the destruction of the usurious financial system, because that is their number one mechanism for control over us. Number two is their control of the media. Number three is their control of politics. But that first one is bigger than the other two added together. Mayor Amschel Rothschild said, "Give me control of the money supply, and I don't care
who makes the laws." Yep.
So we have to lock the bankers up, and then we have to throw away the key and throw away their financial system. And once we've done that, then all of their acolytes will fall by the wayside one by one quite easily, because they haven't got the underpinning of this financial system that they've used to enslave us anymore. And that's the rug that we need to pull out from under their feet. They know it, and that's what they're really worried about. And a lot of people were talking about BRICS as being the solution to the IMF and the World Bank. Well, I think it's a cruel trick. And if you look at the people who are directors of BRICS, it's the same people who are behind the World Bank and the IMF, which is a third factor in my doubting of what Putin actually is, because Putin supported the BRICS very much.
Well, I've been on the same wavelength as you are on this, because the BRICS thing is being hailed as being the next big thing, and it's going to save us from all of our problems. It's going to give competition to the Western banking system, and it's going to save the world. Well, you know what? If something's too good to be true, it probably is.
Yes. And then when you look at the list of people who are on the board of directors, you think, hang on, I know these names. And then you think, hang on, yeah, he used to be part of the World Bank. He used to work for the IMF. You think, okay, so it's the same thing, just rebranded.
And that's all it is. It's a rebranding, because they know the Federal Reserve System has exhausted itself. I mean, it's they're printing the quadrillions of dollars, and so.
Well, yeah, it's run its course. That they can't continue to milk us in that way anymore. So, you know, they're having to come up with better ways, more cunning ways of milking us. And I'm hoping that, you know, enough people are awake this time that they won't pull it off quite so easily. But the other thing is, how much support do they have politically? You know, is it a simple case of they've got all the political support they can buy, and the moment they can't buy it anymore, they're screwed? Or will the politicians continue to support them anyway?
Well, that's the issue, and it's not a matter of buying them, you know, because they've been bought for a long time. It's a matter of when what they used to purchase them with loses its value, and the U.S. dollar is going to collapse here pretty soon. But like I said, I've been waiting for this since about 2010, 11. 12, I thought that we were going to have a financial collapse, and it hasn't happened yet. I don't know how they managed to kick the can down the road so far, but that's exactly what they've been doing, and I just don't see any end to this. I just see that, you know, we're going to knuckle under and be further enslaved and further in debt, and there's no hope for us unless we do something drastic, and I don't know what that is just yet.
Well, $27 trillion of national debt or whatever it is isn't sustainable in the long term.
Well, that's just the on the books. There, the unsecured obligations of the government are another $250 trillion that cannot be sustained. And then you look at the Wall Street problem of the $4 quadrillion worth of exposure on this derivatives issue out here. I mean, like I said, you know, these guys have been running this thing like a casino for a long time, and you know, even the casino goes broke whenever when there's nobody. It's like when you play the game Monopoly. You know, when you own Broadway, Boardwalk and Park Place, and you land on it, the game's over. Well, I'm sorry, the game is over.
Yeah.
But you know, you've got 330 million people in this country that when they can't put gas in their car and they can't feed their kid, they're going to get damn pissed. That's why we're seeing this creation of this police state, because the guys who did this know it's coming. They know the jig is up.
Yeah, very true. And I think they're probably working on moving to a new. They're a parasite, so I think they're probably working on moving to a new host.
Well,
and that could be. Could be China, maybe. Could be India, Brazil. I don't know. But I don't think we'll see the back of them very quickly. I think they will fight tooth and nail before we will get rid of them.
Well, I don't know. I parasites never want to let go. I mean, anybody who's ever had a tick, try to pull a tick off of a dog or off of yourself, those little boogers don't want to let go. They dig in, and they want to take a pound of flesh with them when they go. And that's what I see happening here. These guys don't know when, like a tick, will fill itself up and it'll drop off. These guys don't know when to drop off.
And if they will murder,
what's that? Know,
if they will murder a couple of hundred thousand people on 9/11, which is going to be the end result eventually, and then they'll murder what 5-6 million Iraqis just to give the contracts to Halliburton and secure a couple of pipelines, then. How many Americans will he kill to try and stay on top in America? That's the great worry.
Well, you know what the answer is to that. I'll give you the exact answer. As many as it takes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the real answer. If they wouldn't mind. I mean, look in Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution, which was what our scheduled topic was today.
This is the perfect segue to it.
They killed over 100 million people over a 70-year period of time.
Yeah.
Now, do you think then that was when Russia had what a population of 160 million to begin with, and over that staggered period of time of 70 years, 100 million people were murdered? I think that if we looked at the same thing in the USA, we'd be looking at double that. We'd be looking between 150 and 200 people murdered in this country over the next 70 years. So these guys can keep their positions of power.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be able to achieve it in quite the same way, but I think they'll be there are other tools they could use. You know, we might see a pandemic, you know, but bird flu and Ebola and things like that. That certainly,
you know, that's let's talk about that a little bit, because you know the thing that puzzled me whenever this Ebola outbreak was happening in Western Africa. Mm-hmm. I said, why are they putting them on airplanes and bringing them here? Are you mad? You know, if you've got a problem like Ebola, you treat it in situ. You treat it in place. You don't fly it halfway around the world so it can infect every place. It's nuts. And so I think that that these things have a great deal to do with what is happening and what is going on. And, you know, these things here bother me. They really make me sad.
A lot of that was a media circus. I'm not a fan of looking at YouTube videos for fakery, because I think, you know, it's something that the very bottom feeders do. But I did see some videos from Africa that showed people playing ill, pretending to be ill. And so much of it just seemed to be done for the cameras, to frighten people. That, you know, this horrible Ebola thing is coming. I honestly thought they would use it to, have a lockdown of all interstate transport and introduce these, is it five NAFTA zones that they would lock the country down to in the event of an epidemic. And I honestly thought that was how they were going to leverage it, but you know, it didn't happen. I think perhaps it was a trial run to see, you know, how easy it is to control people through fear of disease. And we might see it happen again. I mean, if you go to Asia now, you know, people there are still terrified of bird flu pandemics.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of Asian people who never go out of the house without wearing a surgical mask.
Well, you see it all the time. I remember being in Beijing Airport a couple years back, and they had heat sensors set up. They had like a camera, but it was an infrared camera. And if you were walking through, if you were too warm, indicating you had a fever, you were immediately segregated. They had your crews hidden, you know, around where these cameras were, out of sight. Of course, you didn't see them until they came and to pull someone away, and they were dressed in the in the full surgical scrub type outfit to get that person out of the flow of the airport. And so the Asians take it very real. But these are just some of the incredible problems that we have to deal with. We've got I hate to call them a ruling class, but that's really what they are. They are our rulers. Everything that we've been told about, you know, freedom and all that kind of stuff is a bunch of bunk. It's a bunch of baloney. We're no more free than my dog is. I mean, God forbid he's out you know, with me without a leash on. That's the only thing that they don't have, is that the leashes that they keep us on are not visible. You know, it's your FICO score. It's fear of the police. It's, you know, fear of losing your job. There's other leashes that they use to control our behavior. At least the dog's got a pretty straightforward deal. He knows whenever you stop, you want him to sit, just heal, and he'll do pretty good. But we've got all these invisible leashes out there that keep the general population in line.
Like Kevin Barrett, and couldn't get into Canada because of his book. Putting people on the no-fly list. That there are all kinds of, you know, things that they can do to ruin your life.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of people have families that depend on them, so they're not wanting to run the risk of anything like that happening to them.
No, they're really not. You know, they. You know, a guy's got a wife and a couple kids. He can't afford to lose his job, so he'll just knuckle under and say, "Hey, what am I going to do? I can't take a stand on this. I can't criticize Israel. I can't tell the rest of the world or my coworkers or anybody else that Israel nuked the World Trade Center." And I don't dare touch that subject at work, because I'll get fired. I'll never be employed again.
Yeah, and you can't spring such out of the blue things onto uninformed people, because they just look at you like you're crazy.
Well, but the thing I notice is that this is spreading. It's the way we think, guys like you and I, is spreading, you know, more and more. The more people I talk to, I don't even have to bring it up anymore. People bring it up to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that I'm that recognizable, you know, in the general population. I'm not. There's a small fringe group that knows who I am and recognizes me, but not, you know, your regular man on the street doesn't. No idea who I am.
I think Netanyahu could be a large part of that, that people can see he's crazy. You know, people can see every time he's on the media that he's, you know, he's not a nice guy. You know, and That doesn't, you know, he's the worst possible, you know, ambassador for Israel and its people. Really, you know, he's the sort of guy where you wouldn't leave and look after your kids for 5 minutes, would you?
No, I would not. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, really, what's changed since the days of Lenin and Trotsky and all those guys?
Not a lot. I mean, at the end of the last show, I mentioned. The man who was responsible directly for the Holodomor was Lazar Kaganovich. And then you mentioned that the woman who is seemingly managing the Ukrainian situation is Victoria Nuland. Well, her husband's name's Kagan, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, Kagan and Kaganovich are the same name, just Ovich means son of. So Kaganovich just means son of Kagan.
And Kagan means king.
Yes, and there is a bloodline, for want of a better term, within the Khazarians, that is the Kagan bloodline, and you know it's very significant. If you look at people who belong to it, you'll get, you know, a good insight into, you know, the Khazarian ruling elite. You know, and they keep popping up over and over again. You know, that for somebody like myself who, you know, studied history, the moment I see Victoria Nuland's involved in Ukraine, it tells me exactly who's behind it, because it's the same people who were behind the last time the Ukrainians were slaughtered.
That's what I've been saying for some time, is that you look at what happened during the Bolshevik Revolution, and you look what's happening in Ukraine right now. These people are the grandsons and granddaughters of the people who did it the first time.
Yeah. And what happened was, when the Soviet Union fell, a lot of them went to Israel. And they've now moved either, they like Igor Kolomoisky, who lives in Switzerland, but he's a joint Ukrainian-Israeli citizen. You know, they pull the strings from afar. Or like Poroshenko, you know, they're right at the heart of things. But they are all from the same little cabal that is the problem. Yeah, and it's not all Israelis. It's that right-wing Zionist Likudist faction led by Netanyahu.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been the guy who's been advocating, saying, you look at Israel, little tiny shithole country in the Middle East, okay?
Yes.
But everybody says, oh, Israel. We'd only eliminate Israel. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. Israel is only the tip of the iceberg. The other 90% of the iceberg is what you don't see, but it's distributed around the world. Every government has got these same Zionist Khazarians in it. You know, every government, I mean, whether you go to Brazil, whether you go to Japan, whether you go to the USA, whether you go to Great Britain, whether you go to Germany, the same Khazarian mafia is in every government. They've infiltrated themselves in on a global basis.
China too.
And the whole reason that this ISIS thing is successful, because, you know, I like I said, when I was in Syria, I met with the Minister of Justice and I met with the Grand Mufti, and I gave them, these guys, this pitch. And the pitch was, look, you know, anytime somebody steals a barrel of oil from your country, anytime somebody steals an artifact, the artifacts in the oil don't move themselves. Somebody's got to put it on a truck. Somebody's got to put it on a ship in order to ship it someplace or get to a refinery. That shipping company, whatever means they're using, is cooperating and aiding and abetting terrorism. Go after the shipping company. File both criminal and civil complaints against them, or better yet, seize their assets whenever you encounter them. That's transporting this. Now, when the oil gets to the refinery, the people at the refinery, the management there, they know that this is not legitimate oil. They're paying $20 a barrel for it. The market price is $47, $48. They know. So they're cooperating. And what the bank that clears the transaction, what I'm trying to get to here is this web of organized crime spans the globe, and that's why the terrorism is happening, because organized crime is still providing it the material support. And Ian will be right back in a minute, right after this short break. Mm-hmm.
Revolution Radio.
We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I'm in such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Hello and welcome to Revolution Radio here at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported internet radio station in the world. So, I want to ask you, do you have a favorite host or several here at Revolution Radio? Don't have the time to catch every show when it's live? Well, you can get all the shows your favorite host for the year 2014 on one data DVD, so you can play on your preferred device at any time. The cost, just $30 plus shipping. Now, remember, I'm just one guy, so allow up to 2 weeks or 10 business days for delivery. Also, the hosts themselves get half of the net proceeds, so not only are you supporting Revolution Radio, you're supporting your favorite host as well. So just go to our homepage and click the banner that says your favorite show. It's just down. It's easy to find. Big old letters. Anyway, so thank you. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps. We are taking pre-orders for the 2014 and we'll start shipping after the first of the year.
I have worked with CIA, NSA, Templars, and Bilderbergers. Now I work for you. My show will disclose secrets, science, and esoteric knowledge. Join me, Stephen D. Kelly, for 2 hours every Thursday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio, Studio A. You can also listen to previous shows by going to youtube.com/freerevolutionradio.
Imagine, just imagine. Imagine a world
where every child and adult will have the opportunity to achieve their dreams.
I believe my inspiration is the answer.
My inspiration is the greatest light,
the greatest energy.
It was born when the universe was sparked into life.
It's within everything.
My inspiration transforms pain into happiness
and failure into success.
My inspiration inspires lives.
It inspires lives.
It inspires human lives.
My inspiration is always shining like the sun.
But it doesn't mean that it's alive.
For centuries, my inspiration was in prison.
In prison.
In prison.
It doesn't belong there.
Its home is to be known to all people.
My inspiration is in trouble.
We are fighting for its life right now.
Right this moment.
This moment.
Millions all over the world want to go beyond their limitations.
Liberate their dreams
can reach success.
The failure of us all to be someone
is the biggest disease
of all time.
Each day, our brothers and sisters die.
Please help us to birth this inspiration to life.
That will stop this disease.
Help us get the word out of our inspiration.
Help us.
Help us.
It's our shared belief for a better future beyond the horizon.
Let's write the future.
Heroism is here.
Stand up and grasp it.
Stand up.
Stand up and grasp it.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up.
Stand up for the dreams of all people.
This is Nighthawk from Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now is your time to stand up and make a difference or fade away. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on VeteransToday.com as well as FreedomSlips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. Today is Thursday, August 6, 2015, and my guest today is Ian Greenhall. Ian, welcome back, sir.
Hello, Mike.
So where do you want to go with this? You know, we keep coming back to this universal theme, and that is we know who the bad guys are. We know that they're a particular group, the Khazarian Mafia. They're infiltrated themselves in every government in the world. They're a fifth column working for their own means against the rest of the global population. And, they're not afraid to kill other people by the hundreds of millions if it gets them their goals. But yet the rest of us seem to be too timid to meet their own energy and to fight them where we can. I mean, how come we don't have teams of assassins going out and just picking these people off? Why are the Kagans still walking around Washington, D.C., influencing our politics? Why is Rothschild still alive? How come somebody doesn't, take him out from, without one of those 1,000-yard shots that they've got? I mean, these things are all possible, and no one can defend against them all the time. But yet these people are out there, and it seems like the rest of the world is willing to ignore them as long as they have their bread and circuses.
I think that one of the main reasons for that is one of the other reasons why they're so keen on promoting war. It's because wars kill off the bravest, the brightest, and the boldest. That, if you look at Britain, France, Germany, Russia, Austria-Hungary, before World War One, and then after World War One, they lost all of their brightest minds, all of their bravest people. That when World War Two, the same thing. That those 20, 21-year-old boys flying Spitfires in the summer of 1940, could have gone on to great and glorious things, but they didn't, because they were killed, and the people that are left are either timid or working for them. Mm-hmm. They know where the bread's buttered. So, certainly if you go back into the past and look at, when revolutions have happened, people seem to have lost that revolutionary spirit in the West. I think it still exists in some other parts of the world. If you look at Brazil and Argentina and other places in South America, or places like Indonesia and Sri Lanka, those people are more apt to have a revolution and overthrow the powers that be than we are in the West. And I think a large part of it must be the fact that, they've had all these wars that have culled off the best of us.
Well, I think that's been by design, and I look at particularly the Caucasian. I look at the Caucasian people, the ones who really created our modern society. And I think that this, from a genetic point of view, I look at this Khazarian crowd, that I look at the rest of, you know, the Caucasian race, or all of the Caucasian race, and if you're one of these Khazarians and you sit back and you look at it and say, look, we only have one potential rival on this planet, that's the Caucasians. Let's get them to fight each other and kill each other. And so that's why I like that poster that's out. I see it sometimes, that says, all right, we just lost Ian. So we're going to try to get him back here. So hang on, folks. Hopefully we'll get him back. We talk about sensitive stuff. I don't know what goes on, but anyway, it's trying to ring through again. So hang with us. And this makes a radio host job very difficult. We don't have a reliable Skype and things. But Ian's in a place where he's had notoriously bad internet, and suddenly it got better, and now it's now we're having an issue with him. Let me go ahead and disconnect him and reconnect him. See if that helps. See if we can get him back on that way. It was just ringing there. I'm sure he's as frustrated as I am. But the bottom line is, folks, is, you know, we know who these culprits are. And I just got a call failed, so... Hang on. Okay, let's see if we can get Ian back on again. We'll try him once more. Just trying to be patient with these things. They're frustrating as all get out. And hope we didn't lose him. Hopefully we'll get him back. It's not showing us any love here. Anyway, we've got a couple listeners in the background here. got my producer Brett is listening, and you know, Brett, why don't you tell us where you're at? Hello, Brett.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah. So.
I don't know if I should tell you.
Now I know where you're at, and let's just say that you're in the heart of the future Kurdistan.
Yes.
So we got people everywhere, folks. There's no fooling us. Anyway, let me try to get Ian back again. I'd like to have him back on, and let me see what I can do about this. There's see what we can do here. Well, now it says it's busy. That's a good sign. Okay, that's a good sign. All right, well.
He may be trying to call you.
He was. He was. All right, now he says his connection is working again. I'm going to add him to the group. Oops, don't want to do that. Let's see if we can get him back on. Well, nothing yet. All right, let's. Here we go. Ian.
Hi.
Hi, welcome back.
Wow, sorry about that. The vagaries of technology.
Hey, if that's the worst that happens, we're having a good day.
Yeah. So where were we?
Well, we were talking about, you know, these people, this group, this rather small group, if you look at the whole global population, and how their bloodthirsty designs are to dominate the world. They've convinced themselves that they're chosen by God, and they don't care who else they kill. And it's, you know, how do we as a collective, as humanity, as a race, deal with you know, renegades, ruffians, you know, people who are who don't play by the social norms of humanity? How are we supposed to deal with this?
You exclude them from society. If they can't live within society and its laws, then you exclude them from it. Maybe on a permanent basis. On a permanent basis means, you know, you shoot them.
Well, that's a page out of my playbook there. But, you know, one of the things that if we had access to real space travel, I mean, which I think we do, is that let's find ourselves an isolated planet someplace that's barely hospitable, and let's round them up and just dump them there, maroon them. And because, like you said, these are parasites. They live off of the work and sweat and toil and brains of other people. They just exploit them. And so let's round them all up and let's just make this a parasite planet. And they can go live off each other. They can go feed off each other's energy and things.
Well, that's something that has been suggested before.
That was what Hitler's plan with Madagascar was.
That was the suggestion I was going to mention. And the case where it was actually done was where the British carted off what they considered the criminal classes to Australia, which in the 1700s and 1800s was the equivalent of sending them to another planet. Really, mm-hmm. It took months to get there. Failing the ability to, remove them and put them somewhere else, then just remove them, I'm afraid. I mean, there is actually another Jewish homeland other than Israel. It was created by Stalin. It's called the Jewish Autonomous Oblast, and it's a godforsaken strip of tundra between Outer Mongolia and Manchuria. And it's perfectly big enough to get a few hundred million people in it. There's not a lot of resources, and it's pretty cold. But you don't make prison too pleasant, do you?
No, you don't. And the thing of it is that here's the other challenge. My friend Alex Powers, great guy, love him to death.
I've spoken to Alex actually.
How do you differentiate same genetics, same lineage? Alex is a stand-up guy. He's not one of these the scum suckers, How do you make determinations of which are the good guys, which are the bad guys? How do you do this?
Well, it's like Martin Luther King said, you've got to judge people on the content of their hearts.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, there's no machine to do that. I don't know. Sit them down and interview them. I suppose it's just like joining the military. They psychologically profile you first, because they don't want sociopaths in charge of weapons of mass destruction. You don't want idiots with an M16.
No, you don't want any of those things, but yet it happens all too often. And one of the things is that the bad guys, I talk about this sometimes on the radio show too, is like the criminal element out there is not afraid if someone threatens their enterprise to go up, they'll pay some kid $50, some poor kid, give him a gun and say, walk up behind that guy and shoot him in the back of the head, and the kid will do it for $50. They don't have an issue with avoiding due process. But as a Western civilization, we've got this huge issue with due process. Oh, we can't do that. That's against his rights.
Well, I think you give a perfect example talking about giving a kid $50 and a gun and saying, go and shoot him in the back of the head. Yeah, that happens all the time in Colombia and Mexico. But it also happens on a very much higher level. I mean, I'm not just thinking of when they shot RFK in the back of the head, but I'm thinking of that Israeli student who was obviously mind-controlled or brainwashed or under the influence of drugs or all of the above, who walked straight up to the back of the Prime Minister and shot him in the back of the head while the Secret Service stood and watched on live TV because he was trying to make peace with the PLO. This is how arrogant and blatant they are. It's one thing to wipe out a rival drug dealer on the streets of Bogota. This was done.
Ian, you cut out there for a second, buddy. Ian. Hello. Okay, he's gone silent for a moment. We're still showing him. Now we're showing him disconnected. Okay. Anyway, while we try to get him back, let me make a. I got some administrative issues to take care of. I'm going to be out of the office, so to speak, on Friday and Monday. I'm traveling, going to spend some time with my son and all that kind of stuff. So just wanted to let you know. So don't call. it's all right. I'm going to be fine. I'm not going away. I was going to have Alex Powers sit in as my guest host, but after yesterday's inability to take callers, Alex is not anxious to do that again. So, you know, we lost the I lost a good resource because Alex was a great guest host. As long as he can take calls, it works out okay. And hang on. But if you take that away, the guy is talking to himself in an empty room, which I've had to do several times. I just decided that whenever that happens, that you know I'm just going to hang up and not do it because if I set time aside, you know, to have a day for callers, I want callers. I don't want to have you know not callers and you know just to sit there and do a 2-hour monologue. That's what got dumped on Alex yesterday, and he was really pissed about it. He was quite angry, and I don't blame him. And if we're going to have a radio network, let's have a radio network and let's give this the right attention that it deserves. And if we're not, then don't. I'll move somewhere else. You know, I've been on other networks before. But, you know, let's treat this thing like it's a business and let's run this thing properly. But anyway, I'm digressing here. I'm just apologizing, you know, in advance for not having a guest host because I had one. And, you know, given the circumstances of yesterday, I will not have one. So you're probably going to be listening to Dead Air on Monday, Friday and Monday. So I just wanted to tell that to the listeners and apologize. And, you know, we can only do so much with what we've got. And I, like everyone else, am entitled. Here's Ian back again. I'm entitled to take some time to go see my kid in his last weekend before school. So these are things I'm allowed to do, particularly in light of the fact that I make so much money doing this job. I make none. Anyway, Ian, welcome back, sir.
I'm very sorry we've left you again.
Well, it happens, and it seems to be whenever we get on these really good topics and really good roles, we seem to have more interference than not.
Yeah, I don't know what you heard from what I said and what you didn't. But I was talking about when they had that Israeli student woke up
behind
the
back. Yes, yes, yes.
That's how blatant they are. You know, they really don't care what we think.
They really don't. And the thing is, they keep doing it because they know they can get away with it.
And also to control people through fear. Yeah, you know, they need to show these horrific things up from time to time because it just keeps that underlying level of fear and paranoia bubbling along.
Well, the fear issue has lost its hold over me. I don't fear things. I don't fear death anymore. I really don't. I don't want to welcome it too soon either, but I don't fear it. And that's one of the things I've talked about on this radio show often, is that our politicians need to have the same expectations of as we do our military, that they need to be able to stand up and say no, in spite of the fact that people are shooting at them. And, that they're not going to take the bribe. They're not going to, kowtow to the intimidation or the threat, that they're going to be stand-up guys, that, you know, doing your job for your people, your country, your culture is more important than any one of our lives. And if you're going to serve in the political system, you better be willing to sacrifice it when the drug cartel comes up and says, we'll give you silver or we'll give you lead. Mm. And you better be willing to stand up. Yeah, plomo o plato.
The first article I wrote for VT was exactly about this. And I was talking about how to overcome these people, it's put in America, it's probably going to take a military figure with real balls, real testicular fortitude to stand up and be counted and lead the revolution against them. And I said probably the last person I could think of who would fit that category was George Patton.
Yeah.
And since then, there hasn't been anybody. I mean, I mentioned Westmoreland in the article Norman Schwarzkopf and Colin Powell, just to compare those men and their characters to the great generals of the past, like Patton, like U.S. Grant, you know, like Robert E. Lee, who were men who, you know, they didn't, Grant especially, didn't want to get involved in politics. None of the three did, but all three of them were very principled men who would put their principles before everything else. And I honestly think that the US military has deliberately avoided promoting anybody like that since World War II. You know, where are the men of the caliber of Patton and Courtney Hodges and Omar Bradley these days? I don't see them.
I don't either. I see a bunch of bureaucrats. And that's being kind.
Well, you know, you see people like Wesley Clark on TV, and they're just not very impressive.
No, they're not.
You know, I mean, I never met George Patton, but, you know, you read any of the descriptions of him, and he was a force of nature. You know, he was somebody that, if he set his eyes on an objective, you didn't get between him and the objective. You know, that is, you know, the typical American military leader, really, you know, in the tradition of, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest and Stonewall Jackson and, you know, William Tecumseh Sherman. You know, these were not men who let things stand in their way. You know, if they thought right was on their side, then, you know, they went and fought for it. And I don't see the same caliber or category of men in positions of rank anymore. And I think that must purely be because they deselect them. Because I'm sure there must still be good, brave men out there. They just don't get to positions of power.
Well, that's the biggest hurdle right there. There's two major hurdles in the military if you're in the officer ladder. One of them is the link between captain to major. You go from a company grade to a field grade officer.
Yeah,
that's a big one. You know, a lot of guys make it, a lot of them don't. But the biggest one is when you go from colonel to general. And, you know, I've known some really, really, really high-caliber guys who have been passed over. And once they're passed over, it's really the death sentence. You're expected to leave. You're expected to resign and go do something else. And that's really the biggest issue. I look at that, and if they're passed over, I mean, God forbid you got passed over twice. I mean, they're gonna walk you out. They're gonna escort you. But it really is, and I think you're onto that. I think that they want the sycophant, they want the bureaucrat. They don't want the guy who is goal oriented and not going to allow anything to get in his way. That's the last guy they want.
I think they learned that. I think they learned that in 1945 with Patton, when he was made supreme commander of the Allied forces in Germany, and he discovered the truth. He said that the Germans were the last decent people in Europe, and we've destroyed them. And I think later in the Pacific, they learned the same lesson with MacArthur as well, where MacArthur didn't really believe that the president was his commander-in-chief, I think. You know, he was a lawn to himself. And I think it was the experiences he had with Patton and MacArthur that made them realise, you know, the military, in order to control the military, you need to make sure that the men at the top are pliable. And, you know, I don't think there has probably been anybody since, you know, Courtney Hodges and Omar Bradley.
Let's talk about that, too, because you know what? Since that time, the U.S. hasn't won a war either.
No, he didn't win the Korean War.
No, and Truman called MacArthur home and cashiered him out.
Well, he wanted to drop, was it 20 atom bombs along the Yalu River?
He wanted to do something extreme, but he was going to stop the Chinese.
But he was faced with about 3.5 million of them, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And, well, you know, you give a military man a military problem and he'll give you a military solution, mm-hmm. which is, you know, use the most suitable weapon in the arsenal to, what, you know, defeat this massive enemy, because you can't take on, you know, overwhelming odds like that without having a force multiplier to even the odds. And the force multiplier they had at the time was the atom bomb. And if the Russians hadn't already got their atom bomb, I think they might have done it. And to this day, the Yalu River might blow.
Yeah, it might, but the collateral damage would have been, you know, horrendous around there. But the thing is, we didn't belong in Korea anyway. What are we doing over there?
It was a manufactured war.
It was another manufactured war, and it was to keep the tensions after World War II heightened so that the military spending could go off. See, the one thing that the military-industrial complex learned is after World War I, when they ramped down, they go, oh my God, where'd our profits go? Our shareholders are going to fire us if we don't come up with another war. And
I think the other reason was to justify maintaining the occupation of Japan.
You think so?
Yeah, I think that the American strategists have known since the 1880s how intelligent and productive the Japanese people are, and they've tried ever since then to keep a rein on them. Ever since Commodore Perry.
Well, it's you look at the most productive people in Asia, the Japanese. Look at the most productive people in Europe, the Germans, and they were targeted and they were taken out. And so I will go back to my earlier premise that this Khazarian cabal is targeting their greatest rivals.
Well, they built the rivals up as well. That Japan was built between 1900 and 1925 by the British. We built all their battleships. We built most of their navy. We supplied them with everything, and it was only in the late 1920s that we stopped that policy and starting to turn against them. Really, the enemy that we faced in World War II, in both Germany and Japan, we had created them.
Well, don't you see the scenario repeating itself? Because right now, the enemy we're creating is China. It's only a matter of time before this Khazarian mafia turns on China and engages them in a global conflagration.
Yeah, I think you've read Orwell's 1984.
Yes, I have.
I think that is not really a work of fiction, and I think it's going to come to pass.
Okay, well, we'll be right back. Ian, hang on, everybody. We'll be right back right after this brief radio or this commercial break. Whatever they call this stuff that they play out here. It's not really commercials. They just give us a break so we can go use the restroom and get a glass of water. I'll be right back.
Necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation. Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records? Addresses? Phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Tune in to Tuesdays at 12 noon Eastern on Studio A to hear Tammy Adams share her knowledge of an unknown realm on Talking with Your Angels. Join Tammy as she uncovers hidden secrets about the spiritual world of angels, ghosts, and other entities that have been with us longer than we know. Tammy is a psychic, a teacher, a spiritual coach, a leader in her field, and will be sharing her information and stories with you. So join us on Tuesdays at noon on Studio A. With Tammy's guidance, you'll find out who has been watching over you from the other side, and soon you will be talking with your angels.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on VeteransToday.com as well as on FreedomSlips.com, Studio B Revolution Radio. I'm sorry, folks. My tongue is twisted. I just got a note from one of the listeners saying, "Greetings. I'm not quite sure who you accuse here, us, the audience, or your radio networks. When I heard Powers yesterday, I took off. I was happy because I do have a life besides the computer." And it's not about the listeners. It's about the network did not have the ability for him to receive phone calls. People were calling in, but they were going straight to the voicemail system. He wasn't able to intercept the phone calls and you really get the listeners, get the callers on the air. And that was a big ball dropped right there. And so let me just be clear about that, because I don't want the listeners to have any questions. I don't want to, you know, let the listeners think it's about you guys. No, it's not. It's about management at the station who didn't switch the system over so that he could take calls. And these things should happen as part of the process of being in the business. And when they don't happen, it was disappointing. And like I said, it cost me my guest host for Friday and Monday. And so now I'm annoyed about it. Anyway, Ian, welcome back, sir.
Hello, everyone.
So we're not going to dwell on that. It's not today's topic. But where were we?
We were talking about a lack of testicular fortitude among the upper echelons of the military, and then we talked about the Korean War.
Let's ask ourselves that question. You know, we don't really have any real threats in the world.
Because you have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Well, we've got this global monetary system that, what do we got left? Four countries, five countries that don't participate. North Korea, who else? But everybody else is tied in, and if they've got control of the money supply, they'll control the actions of the politicians. Which your point about Putin comes to mind, which is very, very well received. So, really, we don't have any adversaries out there except those that are created for us when they need to spike their business cycle or whatever.
Well, good old Ronnie Reagan let that slip. I think it was 1983 or 84 when he said that the one thing that would bring humankind together would be an alien threat.
Yeah, yeah.
Words to that effect.
Well, that's something else. Someone else sent me a comment here about Wernher von Braun earlier saying that that terrorism was going to be one of the things we saw, that an alien threat, then an asteroid or some other nonsense coming at us. But they have to keep us in a constant state of fear. Because if the fear ever left us, we'd hunt these SOBs down like dogs.
Oh, of course. Without fear of retribution, people would do a lot of things. But while the criminal mind would run around, breaking into Walmart and Target, those of us who think a bit more deeply will be locking and loading and heading to the White House and Capitol building and the Houses of Parliament in England, But then again, they're just the patsies. It's the bankers.
The thing of it is, like, this core group of families, like eight families that really control the global financial system, that's really where the problem is. And those are the ones who've been identified. We know who they are. We just need to get to them. And, I talk about that scene out of Fight Club sometimes where the police chief is giving a speech. He's going to get tough on crime. He's going to stop all these brigands from doing what they're doing. And eight or ten guys, he goes to use the restroom at the hotel that he's giving the speech at. Eight or ten guys out of the kitchen and in the janitorial department jump him in the bathroom and tell him, no, we're everywhere. You don't know us. Yeah. I keep thinking about that. I keep waiting for that day to happen when the common people say, look, enough of this. We're not going to take this anymore, and we don't need your lousy system. I mean, this is the human farm, and we're being farmed, and we're being used for our produce, by other humans or other who knows what.
Well, it can happen that you look to Romania in 1989 and 1990, Ceausescu was giving a speech in the, to the main square in Bucharest, and they all suddenly started booing him. And the look on his face was priceless because he knew the jig was up. And, the very stereotypical, overcoated, Homburg-wearing security service quickly ushered him away. And, the next time we saw him, he was in front of a military tribunal, a kangaroo court. That didn't last very long before they took him and his wife outside and riddled them with bullets. So a revolution can happen. But if you think how bad things had been in Romania for a prolonged period of time, then it maybe makes you think that things in America are going to have to get quite a lot worse before the Americans are ready to do what the Romanians did.
Well, the Americans are very spoiled and petulant children. And, you look at this, and particularly our permanent underclass is very demanding. And once we have that financial hiccup that I know is coming, I just don't know when. But once we have that, and guys are, grown men are watching their wives crying and their kids are hungry. When that happens, things are going to get different real fast, and like I said, that's why they're building up this police state in order to keep order.
I think we have seen since the 1960s a concerted attack on that permanent underclass, certainly the African American part of it. That the children of the men who were Black Panthers and following Martin Luther King and Malcolm X in the early 60s, ended up in the 70s strung out on heroin. And that heroin, didn't get here. I didn't get to America without the influence of some very influential people.
Well, that's the whole story here. It's not just the heroin, it's the cocaine, it's the crack cocaine, it's all the drugs out there.
In the 90s with crack.
Yeah, it's all the same stuff, guys. I mean, this is part of their rule book. I mean, that's another reason why I think that we have the propensity or the preponderance of drugs in this country is because it's another social control network for that permanent underclass, which has every right to be angry. And yet, you know, you give them the welfare money, they get the food stamps, they get all the stuff with it, and they recycle it right back through the system by buying drugs with it. And it goes right back in the same hands where it came from initially. It's amazing to me how they how well engineered this is. I mean, how do we break the paradigm? How do we break the system? How do we make this thing stop?
Which it's just the same thing as the opium wars in China, that the British kept the Chinese down by importing opium. And, you know, the banks like Barings and many of the other great London institutions were built on those drug profits. And then you look at Wall Street today and the Rockefellers and the Morgans and Chase Manhattan, you know, so much of their business comes from laundering drug money. So, again, you know, you cut the head off the snake. You take out those elite banking families, and you know that then the rest will fall in line. Now, I don't believe that you know we need to kill millions of people. Just you know, we need to just cut the head off the snake. We're talking a few thousand people at most, probably.
I think so too. I think probably less than between 5,000 and 7,500 globally. And this would be a new planet the next day.
No, they talk about the 1% elite. Well, there is a 1% elite, but I believe it's 1% of that 1% that is the real problem. And, you know, I think it was Bernard Baruch. It was somebody like that who said that Europe... This was between the wars. He said Europe is run by a club of 300 men, bankers and industrialists, and they're all on first-name terms. You know, so if you wanted to free Europe then there's your list of 300 to get rid of. You know, I'm quite happily shoot 300 to 300 million.
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. And that's the issue, because if we do get drawn into another global conflict, we're going to lose at least that many people on this planet.
There has been talked about for a long time. I mean, Ted Turner talked about it in the 80s. And the Georgia Guidestones mentions it. But, you know, there seems to be a faction of the elite that wants to reduce the world's population to 500 million because that's how many slaves they think they need to run everything for them. And if you think there's somewhere north of 7 billion of us at the moment, and you're looking at a global conflict of killing, what, nearly 7 billion people?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put it past them. I'm sure that they've done studies decades ago into how long the environment would take to recover after various types of conflict. You know, and nowadays, you know, we're on the fifth generation nuclear weapons where the radiation's gone in 72 hours.
Well, yeah, the radiation's gone, but if you were exposed to it, you're still going to die, which is why we're going to lose another 70,000 people in New York City from the 9/11 events.
Yeah, but if they'd evacuated New York City for 72 hours, we wouldn't have.
And that's true.
Unfortunately, you know, they only evacuated those that they wanted to save,
yeah.
Which wasn't many.
It wasn't many. They don't mind culling the herd, and they don't mind culling the herd at random. They don't care if they get some. Actually, I think they want the best and brightest. I think that's their first choice, is to eliminate those.
Well, I think they learned that, to how effective that was with World War One, where you had, you know, regardless of whether it was Britain, France, Germany, Russia, you had such upswellings of national pride that, you know, everybody enlisted. And so that, you know, we lost all our brightest brains. You know, we lost the best of that generation. And, you know, I honestly don't think Europe ever recovered from the losses of World War One in that way.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I've got another, you know, facet of that issue to look at. And the issue is that while you're sending the best and brightest men overseas to slaughter each other and kill each other, you're leaving the best and brightest women behind for those who are gutless and cowardly and unethical to have their choice of, where now the guys who wouldn't get looked at they've got a much better field, a much better market to look at. So it helps their genetic potential in order to create that situation where their superior rivals are off fighting and dying.
And I believe they do look at it in such terms as well. You know, I believe that bloodlines and genetics are something that, you know, they hold dear to as being part of, you know, their mechanism for achieving global domination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, I mean, it's like when the conversation turns to talk of the occult and more esoteric beliefs, I always try and make the point that it doesn't matter whether you or I believe in occult things. What they matters do. Is they do. You know, so that, and for all those people out there who think, you know, we might be racist or showing any kind of prejudice when we talk about this subject, I want to make the point that when they slaughter millions of people, they don't differentiate between race, religion, creed, or colour. We're all just brute beasts for the slaughter, as far as they're concerned. And this extends to their fellow Jews as well. Like, most recently, they had Mossad murder two young Israeli schoolboys in order to justify Operation Cast Lead, the invasion and genocide of the Palestinians. Yeah, so whether it doesn't matter to them who their victims are, white, black, brown, Jewish, Islamic, Christian, they don't care, because to them we are all the same. We are just beasts.
Well, the fundamental question comes back around again: how do we get rid of this parasite? How do we you know, expunge this thing? How do we remove it? How do we get it? You know, see, that's why I've had dogs, and you know, you get this stuff called Frontline. You put a drop on the back of their neck, and you put a drop at the top of their tail, and you know, 3 or 4 days later, all the fleas and ticks are dead, and you know, that's just how it works. How do we do that for this entire planet? How do we free our entire race from these parasites? What do?
Again, I think the first step is to knock out from under them their pillars of power, and the main one is the usurious financial system. You know, that it's like a tripod that supports them. One part is their control of the financial system, one part is their control of the media, and one part is their control of politicians. But by far the most important of those three is the financial system, because once you get rid of their financial system, then it becomes far more difficult for them to control the media and far more difficult for them to control the politicians. I don't think, you know, they will be able to stand with only two legs remaining. So get rid of that financial system is always going to be the first step. And then, after that, it's going to be very tricky, but we're going to, you know, to avoid mass violence, because they're not going to go down without a fight. I mean, this is notorious Samson option that Israel is claimed to possess, where they're supposed to have placed nuclear weapons within 150 of their embassies worldwide as a knife to our throats. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's illustrative of their thinking that they wouldn't hesitate to nuke Washington, Paris, London, Berlin, as long as it meant that they continued to control what was left.
Well, you know, see, I put myself in that position. I thought, what if I was president, and if I had to deal with this fact that there is a Samson option, that the Israelis are going to detonate nuclear weapon, let's say a big one, 8 or 10 megaton crowd pleaser, you know, a real big one, in a major U.S. city. I would have to say, to the point, say, look, I will not be blackmailed, I will not be bullied. I'm going to save as many of my people as I can, but you go ahead and blow that thing, because then it's an all-out war against you. And we're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks, and just hunt them all down and kill them.
Problem with that is that since JFK, there hasn't been a president who was really in charge. And I think the same thing you were talking about with the military, where they weed out the good guys, you know, in middle ranking positions. I think the same thing occurs with politics.
I will absolutely firsthand confirm that for you.
I can think of examples that are so blatant that even the most uninformed would have to agree with this. You know, in Britain, for example, we suffered terribly from Tony Blair. And Tony Blair only got into power because John Smith, the leader of the Labour Party, who was in perfect health, had a mysterious heart attack and dropped dead. You might remember ex-Foreign Secretary Robin Cook. He resigned from the government, and then over the Iraq War, he resigned from Parliament altogether. And in his speech that he gave, resigning from the House of Lords, he stood up and he said that this is a phony war, that Al-Qaeda is a phony enemy, that Al-Qaeda was the name of the CIA database of Afghani mujahideen who had been trained, financed and equipped by the CIA. And he didn't then go on to say, therefore, Al-Qaeda now is just the CIA, but the influence was so obvious that even the most dim-witted would have put two and two together. And he repeated the same accusations, but with more detail, in a Guardian article a few weeks later. And then a few weeks after that, he was dead on a Scottish hillside, another mysterious heart attack.
Well, the heart attack seemed to be a big one. Suicide seems to be a big one. Car accidents seem to be a big one. There's a number of them. Let me switch subjects on you a little bit, because we talked about Putin. Let's talk about the U.S. presidential thing. You know, what's your opinion on Trump?
I think he is financed by the same people who are ultimately behind the likes of Alex Jones. I think that you're probably going to see a situation in the next US presidential election where one side is being financed by Sheldon Adelson and the other side is being financed by George Soros. And Adelson and Soros are two fingers of the same Zionist hand. Therefore, your next presidential election is just going to be a farce, and whichever they decide they're going to put into power is the one that's going into power.
Well, I was liking Trump's rhetoric. I liked his comments on the illegal immigration problem we have. I liked his problems on welfare reform. I liked a lot of his comments. But whenever a 9/11 truther asked him about 9/11 in a public debate or a public appearance, and he said, "Oh no, that's just nonsense," that's when he lost me.
I think his role is that of Theodore Roosevelt when, was it 1912? When Woodrow Wilson was elected, the two candidates from the Democratic and Republican parties were Woodrow Wilson and Wendell Willkie. And neither of them was very good. But the reason why they managed to get Wilson into power was because they split the opposition vote by bringing Theodore Roosevelt out of retirement. And therefore, the opposition vote was split between Roosevelt and Wilkie, and they managed to get Wilson into power. Well, I'm sure that that's what Trump's doing. Trump is the Theodore Roosevelt, and therefore, the opposition vote will be split between Trump and whoever else, allowing them to get their real candidate into office.
So who do you think the real candidate is, Jeb Bush or a Hillary Clinton?
Bush is maybe a little obvious.
No, I think they're going to hold Bush in reserve for 2020-2024. That's just my opinion.
Well, they've given you the first ever black president. Now maybe it's time to give you the first ever woman president as another way of making you think that, you know, things are more progressive than they actually are. And I think perhaps the American people would accept a female president now because, you know, we've seen Margaret Thatcher in Britain,
Angela Merkel in Germany, etc.
You know, so I think the time is ripe for Hillary. What Hillary is and what she represents, I'm not certain, but I'm very suspicious about it.
Well, I am too. I don't trust the political process any longer either. I don't trust the candidates. I don't trust the process. You know, I look at this mess on the Republican side and say, oh my God, we've got 17 candidates, and there's not a damn one I get that's worth a warm bucket of spit.
Well, they did the same thing in England with the Conservative Party, that in order to make sure Tony Blair didn't have any trouble, they placed people in charge of the Conservative Party who were never going to be elected. And I'm thinking primarily of Ian Duncan Smith and secondly of William Hague. Neither of them were ever going to be elected, but they were the two Conservative Party leaders during the time Tony Blair was Labour Party leader. And if you know anything about Tony Blair and New Labour, it's little more than an Israeli front organisation. And
that's what the Republican Party has become in America. It's really an Israeli front organization. And the Democrat Party is no better. I mean, all you have to do is look at their top 10 donors to both parties, and it's the same players.
Yeah, like I said before, one side will be financed by Adelson, the other side will be financed by Soros. Yeah, and both fingers are the same as Zionist
hand. If we had to devise a tactic, a strategy to free ourselves from this, we know the banks are there. That's their pillar. That's the thing we need to target. How do we go about it? How do we go about, you know, eliminating the banking system, you know, as it exists today from our daily lives, so they can't interfere with us?
I feel like giving you a flippant answer saying you need a time machine and going back and getting hold of a Nathan Bedford Forrest or a George Patton and giving them the job. But that's never going to happen. And I don't think you're going to find anybody today to do the job either. I think we're maybe going to have to do what the Icelandics did and do it through the courts. But such is the control that they have over the courts, I don't have an answer for you, to be honest. And I think that it's going to prove to be impossible without widespread violence. And I think that's what they're counting on. You know, that they will prevail from the period of violence and come out the other side of it in even more control. Because out the other side of it, they'll have things in place like a police state.
And a reason for having it. So really, we don't have any clear answers. We don't have a clear path to. We know what we have to do. We just don't know how to get there yet.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Well, Ian, our time is up. I want to thank you very much for coming on and joining us here. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I'd just like to apologize for my connection problem.
Hey, no worries. And folks, remember, I will not be here tomorrow. I will not be here Monday. And I don't have a guest host. So it might be dead air for you. I apologize in advance. But hey, I do what I can do. Everybody have a good day. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.